Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, explained what's behind the NYSEG bill hikes. We've been reporting the stories of NYSEG customers affected by their high electricity bills this winter. And now Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar speaks with Lori Wheelock, Executive Director of the Public Utility Law Project, to help us unpack what New Yorkers really need to know about their high bills. Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government is here. And now with warmer weather comes the opportunity to fix some county roads. How many? We'll find out. Local youth are going to grow their green thumbs through the Junior Master Gardener program at Western Sullivan Public Library. It's an international program providing opportunity for youth to interact and bond with nature. We'll find out more. And the Borscht Belt Museum, bringing comedy back to the Catskills. We'll chat with one of the comedians appearing at the first Borscht Belt Comedy Club night of 2025. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Hamas says it is willing to release the one remaining living Israeli-American hostage, along with the bodies of four other dual national Americans. They have been held in Gaza since the October 2023 attack on Israel. The militant group made the announcement online on its Telegram channel. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf has more from Tel Aviv.
In that Telegram statement, Hamas said it will release 21-year-old Idan Alexander, an Israeli soldier and American dual citizen who was serving at the time of his capture. It also agreed to release the bodies of, quote, four other dual nationals. It's unclear what the terms of their release would be or whether a formal proposal has been put forward to either side by the mediators. The statement comes after the U.S. has, in recent weeks, held direct talks with Hamas, a major shift in U.S. policy. Both U.S. officials and Hamas confirmed they discussed the release of American hostages. In response to the announcement, Israel called Hamas's willingness to release the Americans, quote, alleged, and said it was intended to sabotage negotiations. Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer has stunned colleagues. He has changed his mind and will now support a Republican-backed stopgap spending bill. If the measure fails to pass, the federal government will partially shut down late tonight. Schumer describes the GOP spending bill as awful, but he says a shutdown would be worse. Schumer adds that would give President Trump the chance to wipe out more federal programs and fire thousands more federal workers. But some Democrats are horrified. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley says Schumer is mistaken.
We know, as we look in history around the world, that an authoritarian individual needs to be fought sooner than later. So it's a big mistake if we come down on the side of providing votes for this Republican plan.
Republican lawmakers strongly back the budget legislation. Many are hopeful that new measures will follow President Trump's lead and deeply cut federal spending. Stocks opened higher this morning after another big sell-off yesterday. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 300 points in early trading.
Any rebound is welcome for investors, but it won't erase the big losses over the last 2 weeks. The S&P 500 index joined the NASDAQ in correction territory after falling more than 10% from its recent peak. It appears that market jitters over President Trump's trade war will not be compounded by a federal shutdown this weekend. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says he'll hold his nose and join Republicans in voting for a stopgap spending bill to keep the government's lights on. China's government's ordering banks to encourage more use of credit cards in hopes that increased consumer spending might give a lift to the world's second largest economy. Stocks jumped overnight in both Hong Kong and Shanghai. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 315 points. You're listening to NPR. President Trump says he has talked with Russian President Vladimir Putin about Russia's war in Ukraine. The U.S. is promoting a 30-day ceasefire. Ukraine has accepted this, but Putin has conditions. Writing online, Trump says there's a good chance the war could end, but he says he has asked Putin to spare Ukrainian soldiers' lives. A new prime minister will be sworn in today in Canada. Mark Carney will replace the current prime minister, Justin Trudeau, who led the country for nearly a decade. NPR's Jackie Northam reports Trudeau is leaving office on a high note.
Trudeau was first elected in 2015 in a landslide victory. Tall, with movie star looks, and from a storied political family, he energized Canadian politics. In the early years, he was seen as a transformative leader, pushing a progressive agenda. But enthusiasm for him waned as the economy soured following the COVID-19 pandemic, along with serious housing and immigration issues. In January, he announced his resignation. But then President Trump stepped in, belittling Trudeau and placing stiff tariffs on the country, which infuriated Canadians. Trudeau pushed back hard, slapping retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. He now hands over the reins to Mark Carney, who will have to find his own way of working with Trump. Jackie Northam, NPR News.
The Federal Aviation Administration says the engine on a passenger plane caught fire yesterday at the Denver airport. Officials say the plane was flying from Colorado Springs to Dallas when it diverted to Denver. Everyone escaped the plane, but 12 people were sent to the hospital with minor injuries. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Well, we made it to Friday, and TGIDH, thank goodness, it's Dan Hoost. I just made that
thank
up.
Thank you.
I flubbed it a little bit.
Yeah, that's all right.
But TGIDH.
To get a.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we'd say it that way. This is Dan Hoost. He is the communications director from Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. And we know we made it to the end of the week because we get to hear from you and find out what's going on in Monticello.
Okay, good. So I make people feel good.
You all do. Right? Well, right. I hope so. Let's talk about this.
Well, we'll see. No taxes being talked about.
Let's talk. Right. We hear your tax dollars at work, apparently. 34 miles of county roads being paved in 2025 now that it's a warmer weather. You guys can do that. Let's talk about some of those roads and how much this taxpayer money goes toward that.
Well, there's a number of roads. We're actually going to have a map ready next week, so I'm not going to go into all the details, but 34 miles, and remember, this is in either direction. So would you really, for lane miles, I would say it's double that, which would be, what, 68? My math actually is working this morning. So we are going to be doing that. In addition, there'll be some bridge work announced shortly as well. There was over $20 million allocated by the county legislature to do road and bridge work. It's a fundamental part of what we do at the county, our Division of Public Works. And thanks to the good fiscal stewardship that this legislature and the past legislature have done with taxpayer money, there is no bonding necessary. In other words, we're not going into debt to do that. We can pay for that out of the general fund and out of grants and other funding that we get at the state and federal levels. So I will have an exact list a week from now that we'll be posting with maps so that you can understand where we're going to be. And of course, throughout the summer, I will be posting, typically I put it first on the 911 page because that's where people look for traffic alerts, as to when and where there might be lane closures. I don't think there'll be road closures with this. Maybe with some bridge work there will be, but with paving, we try to keep the road open. But you're going to have to make sure that you put in some extra time, and please be kind around our workers, because my gosh, they are in a very dangerous situation if people don't follow the rules.
Yeah, dangerous situation, and trying to make it better, make the roads better for everybody. This 34 miles of roads that are being paved this year, is that on par with what's been previously paved? Is it more or less around the same?
It's, we're keeping ahead of where we need to. Basically every 10 years, our roads need to be repaved. And we have around that much, 300, I think, something 400 miles, not lane miles again, miles like you and I would think about it. So we have to make sure that we're on top of that all the time, basically. It's an ongoing thing. Of course, when fiscal times are tough, that's one of the things that gets scaled back, one of the first things it does. Thankfully, right now, fiscal times are not tough. We came off of probably one of our best fiscal years ever in terms of outside revenue. I think I've said before. Yeah. Sales tax revenue, mortgage tax revenue, bed tax revenue has all actually combined exceeded property tax revenue. And that's the way you want it. We want to be relying more on those outside forms of revenue than have to rely on our taxpayers.
You said you'll have that map out next week.
Yes.
When do things begin in earnest in terms of the road work? You mentioned summer, but you know, things could start a little earlier. I would say by next month,
if weather holds, because the ground is already starting to unfreeze. Listen, the state DOT has been out on 17B on my route to work today. They've been out all this week patching up cracks, and it's that, I think they call it cold patch, that they've been putting down. The blacktop plants, I believe, are going to be opening up in April, and that's when you'll really see in earnest that we're going to be out there.
And in order to attract some more folks to help with that, legislature raising the seasonal highway workers' pay.
I am glad you segued into that. I thought that would be a good segue. So you really are a professional, I tell you, Tim.
That's why I'm so glad you're here.
So it's the Mutual Admiration Club. That's what everyone tunes in for, right? So anyway, yes, our Division of Public Works hires 7 seasonal employees each year. And these are folks who work in traffic control and also in our solid waste department. The current rate is $16.30 an hour with an additional 50 cents per year of experience. But that's actually pretty low these days. You can go to a fast food restaurant and be making more than that. So the legislature has tentatively agreed, I assume they will officially agree next week, to raising that to $20 per hour for between 16 and 40 hours a week of work for these seasonal positions that we will be advertising very shortly.
Tackling the unhoused problem, homeless problem, there's a public hearing coming up April 24th. This is about a property in Monticello on which there's a proposal to build a housing assistance facility. Tell us more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the resolution yesterday is to set a public hearing on, there it is, April 24th at 10:10 a.m. That's a Thursday in the hearing room of the government center. The legislature is working on securing a lease for property on Pitaluga Road. That's a dead-end road behind our jail and sheriff's office. Back where, if you see the big tower back there, the communications tower, that's considered off of Pitaluga Road. So it's accessed from, I think it's Old Liberty Road that goes to Hurleyville from Monticello. And back in there, we are going to be leasing property and a minimum 25-year lease, and then get a grant to fund construction of a 20-bed homeless housing services center and shelter, basically a temporary shelter, transitionary facility, a way to house people in emergency situations without having to put them in one of our local hotels or motels, which really should be catering anyway to tourists, not to the homeless. So this is a way to help get a better handle on that. Now, of course, 20 beds is not going to solve the issue, but we're starting someplace. Mm-hmm. This is something we've wanted for many years, and we're finally going to get it through our Division of Health and Human Services. So again, there'll be a public hearing on that April 24th, 10:10 a.m. in front of the legislature at the government center.
And the county will lease the property. The county is also building the facility. Mm-hmm.
We'll be working with a nonprofit called Honor out of Middletown. We have already extensively planned with them. That's their mission, is to help the homeless. Honor, I believe, stands for something, but it's not spelled out, and I'm not going to try to guess at what H-O-N-O-R stands for, but they are a very trusted partner of ours and are looking to operate this with our Health and Human Services Division.
Legislature yesterday also extending additional benefits to county employees who are called up for active military duty. What are those benefits that they receive, and what are these extra benefits that are coming?
Well, the resolution says under Section 242 of the New York State Military Law, reservists and National Guard members are eligible for paid leave while performing ordered military duty for 30 calendar days or 22 work days, whichever provides the greater benefit to the employee in any calendar year or continuous period of absence which spans more than one calendar year. So back in 2015, the legislature started extending and agreeing with this to extend additional benefits to all employees called to active military duty for its paid and unpaid leave time. The benefits are following the exhaustion of their leave provided under state law. eligible employees must be granted a total of another 30 calendar days or 22 work days, again, whichever provides the greater benefit. And then employees who are military reservists and are called to active duty are eligible for pay between their rate of pay prior to their date of activation and the compensation they receive as a result of such active duty, and the continuation at no additional cost of family health insurance coverage on the same basis provided to such employees prior to their date of activation. So in other words, what this is basically to say, we've got your back. You're not going to lose your benefits, your pay, your position, if you're called up to active military duty with the county. And it's in above and beyond what the state requires.
Some performance-based incentives approved for summer youth for the employment program, that summer youth employment program. Tell us a little bit more about that and what this additional incentive for those folks.
Yeah, this is a great program that we do. We have at least 50, if not more, summer youth employment program participants that come from all over the county. These are teenagers that we provide employment for in a very responsible, controlled environment. They aren't just going around doing what they want to do with no supervision. We have crew leaders. They get paid the current minimum wage for New York State, which is $15.50 per hour. Normal work week of about 29 hours per week starts July 7th, ends August 15th, so it's 6 weeks. And now we also have an incentive program for them where they can earn up to an additional $300 if they demonstrate those soft skills that are so important. Teamwork, job knowledge, attendance, work habits, leadership, cooperation, courtesy. All those kinds of things we want from our own coworkers and sometimes don't get, I suppose. Let's train this early. And so we're very, very much wanting to attract students, but also, or young people, but also teach them skills, not just this be a summer job, this they learn from. We're also interested if there are any nonprofits out there that are willing to be a host site to have our young people come work at. We want to hear from you and talk to you.
Lots of different opportunities too. Like
absolutely.
Not just one particular area.
No. There's whole bunches of teams that go out and do all sorts of different things from gardening to learning radio broadcasting, actually. So yes, if JFF's interested or anyone else is interested that's a nonprofit, we'd like to hear from you. You would contact Krista. And this is also if you're a parent or a young person who wants to participate, contact Krista at 845-794-3340. That's our career center, our Center for Workforce Development. That's 794-3340.
We're talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with more. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
On the next Science Friday, what will administration cuts mean for the future of biomedical research in the U.S.? Plus some brain-breaking math in honor of Pi Day.
You know, our world is filled with periodic, repetitive behavior, and as soon as you try to describe any of that with math, Pi is going to pop up.
That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Quality, community, and how to deal with those library books you checked out 18 years ago and never returned. On the next Selected Shorts, celebrate the stories and legacy of the great Grace Paley with me, your host, Meg Wolitzer.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. I'm joined by Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday. You got some news about the great work that Fearless Hudson Valley does. Fearless Hudson Valley, of course, deals with domestic abuse. The county contracts with them to help with this issue. Talk about what they were reporting yesterday.
Yeah, they actually have an office in our government center annex near our probation department, and they just do wonderful work. They reported to legislators yesterday that in 2024, they handled more than 11,000 hotline calls from Sullivan County and mounted workshops for nearly 1,000 people. And this is about domestic abuse and really helping teach people to safely stand up for themselves, seek help when they need it. That hotline call, of course, 11,000. Now, that's not necessarily 11,000 people. It could be repeat calls from folks. But this is one of those things that happens behind the scenes. Unless you're a victim of it, or unfortunately some people are perpetrators too, you aren't aware that this is going on, but this is an absolutely crucial service for us to have. We're saving lives. They're saving lives. And they are just an absolutely wonderful organization that by its nature works quietly, but here's a chance for us to at least say, hey, they're working hard.
Were they able to provide context about those statistics, the 11,000 calls or 1,000 workshops? I mean, it's great that they're providing this help, but just wondering how that aligns with...
They did not go into detail about it, but the hotline basically is for people who are in serious situations, who are fear for their lives, who fear for their children, who feel like they're stuck, they can't get out of a certain situation. And they have counselors 24/7 that are willing to help with that.
Yeah, there is a 24-hour hotline if you or someone you know is needing to report any kind of safety issues with yourself. You can call their hotline, 845-562-5340, and they're there 24 hours a day, if you think you or someone you know may be victim of abuse. Call that hotline, 845-562-5340.
Very important number to know.
Also, some news about the Veterans Cemetery. It's expanding. Talk about that and why the need to expand.
Well, to be perfectly honest, it's why every cemetery expands, because death is a fact of life, I think, as we used to say in the Democrats' obituaries. I always thought, I don't know if that's the best thing to say, but it really is facts. People are passing away, and we have veterans in the community and their families, and this cemetery is open to that. I think it's a wonderful thing that we provide because they are buried with respect and in dignity. We perpetually maintain it. It is maintained by taxpayer money, so this is a cemetery that will never get overgrown, that will never be neglected. And over the years, we've had to add on acreage. Now we're adding another almost acre, room for at least 200 more graves at the Veterans Cemetery. It is a very peaceful place to go. I find it, when we have our Memorial Day service there, I find it a place of somber reflection. And also a matter of pride for the amount of people that have served our country from Sullivan County that we have. There's also a really cool tank up there that is interesting just to take a look at and explore. I'm not sure of the story exactly how it got there, but it sits in a place of prominence up there and just adds to it. This is a place we encourage respectful, quiet visitation. Don't bring the kids to climb all over the tank or something, but bring kids to help them understand what these people sacrificed for all of us and just to pay some honor and tribute to them, which we will continue to do along with this expansion.
An honorable resting place. Some of the first responders in the county, 60 local firefighters attending a personal accountability and professionalism training session on Sunday. Talk a little bit about this session and what they got out of it.
Yeah, this was really interesting that this was offered. This was through our Bureau of Fire, our Joint Sullivan Fire Task Force, that's our recruitment and retention task force, and the Sullivan County Volunteer Firefighters Association. This was at Resorts World Catskills, the casino, and there were over 60 firefighters that showed up at 8 in the morning. Remember, this was right after the time change, so the day before it would have been considered 7 in the morning. And they came for their whole morning on a Sunday morning to learn about professionalism and accountability. This isn't learning about how to fight a fire, how to run hose, how to deal with a fire investigator, file reports, none of that. This was about how do we convey ourselves as the fire service in a professional and dignified and accountable manner to the people that we serve. Because there's tax dollars involved, there's lives involved. There is public. There's equipment involved. There's also just how you dress. For example, they showed a picture of firefighters, not locally, but firefighters showing up to a scene with only half their turnout gear on. They've got a jacket on, but then they're wearing shorts. Like, we need to look professional. If you're going to put the uniform on, whether it's turnout gear or your actual formal uniform, you put the whole thing on, unless it's absolutely something where you have no choice, but you have to get there right away to do that. But it was a really interesting thing to see about how can we support one another to be accountable and professional in the job that we do, because it doesn't matter when you're at a scene, whether you're volunteer or paid. Nobody cares. You're there to do a job, whether you're paid for it or not, and you need to do it professionally. And it was really, it was put very nicely. It wasn't a put down to anyone, but it was also setting expectations and standards that I think the public should be very glad that they're trying to achieve.
Attendees generally gave good reviews afterwards?
They did. It was a great group. I wondered if they were all going to sort of be like, you know, you're telling us things we already should know. This is disrespectful. No, they all jumped into it. Of course, we had two great local fire instructors. We had Brian Soller, the chief of the Rock Hill Fire Department, and Nate Routledge, I think is how you say it, who's the chief of the Roscoe Rockland Fire Department. And they know all these folks there, and it just was a wonderful chance for them to spend time on something you wouldn't think firefighters are talking about, but they are.
The Child Advocacy Center is offering an internet and digital safety seminar for kids. That's an important thing for parents to have. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. Although the children are invited too, it's kids in grades 6 through 12. So really, we're talking about mostly teenagers. There will be separate groups for adults and children to ensure learning is age appropriate. Not everybody's going to be tossed together, because what the adults can see and should talk about isn't necessarily what the kids have to know. It's going to be on April 24th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. At a public health or a public health office in Liberty. That's 50 Community Lane. It's going to be about safe internet use, online dangers like cyberbullying, grooming, predatory behaviors, and for parents, the kind of controls and technology monitoring they can implement. However, while this is on April 24th, we need to know by April 3rd, so basically by the end of this month, whether you're coming or not, so that we can have the appropriate materials ready. This is completely free. You just need to contact our Child Advocacy Center coordinator, Rachel Waldman, at 513-2408. That's 845-513-2408. Or Rachel.Waldman, W-A-L-D-M-A-N, at SullivanNY.gov. She is looking forward to hearing from you. This is a very timely, important thing. If you have kids in grades 6 through 12, even if you can't or don't want to bring them, maybe you should attend as a parent.
A couple of reminders before we go. Spring cleaning means you can get rid of some of those old paint cans.
I just know you love talking about this.
I still have them.
You got to do it. So we're taking all sorts of paint, whether it's water-based, oil-based, whatever it is, we're going to take that paint for free from you at any of our transfer stations all around Sullivan County. You don't need to do anything other than bring it and drop it off. If you have more than 100 gallons of it, we'll even come pick it up for you.
I don't have that much, but
okay.
I'm ready for the spring cleaning, let me tell you. Also, there's a blood drive coming up March 21st. There's still an urgent need for blood.
Absolutely. March 21st from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Government Center in the hearing room where sometimes the blood flies at legislature meetings, right? But this time it'll just be being collected. Ha, ha, ha. I had to sneak that in there.
You're making blood puns?
Okay. It's Dan jokes. Not dad jokes. Dan jokes.
Dan jokes.
But anyway, true. Yeah, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. March 21st at the Government Center. You can walk right in. No pre-registration necessary.
T-G-I-D-H. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness it's Dan Hoos. He joins us every Friday. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next Friday with more news from the Sullivan County government.
My pleasure. Take care, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, what's behind those NYSEG bill hikes? We'll try to find out more from the Public Utility Law Project in Albany. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, hints on how to tackle weeknight dinners from Melissa Clark and Emily Weinstein of the New York Times. We'll also hear from writer Lori Wolliver. Her new memoir, Care and Feeding, is about the highs and lows of working in the restaurant industry, including the many years she spent working with the late Anthony Bourdain. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, as we've been reporting stories of NYSEG customers affected by their high electricity bills this winter, some of them taking drastic changes due to their high bills, like turning off the heat in their homes because they can't afford it. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar spoke with Lori Wheelock, executive director of the Public Utility Law Project in Albany, to help unpack what New Yorkers really need to know about their bills.
Can you explain from a bird's eye view why customers are seeing increased bills?
Yeah, absolutely, Kim. And it's really about twofold issues. And for NYSEG customers, we always encourage them to pull up that bill. You can get it out of your online account or the next time it comes in the mail. And really the heart of what's going on with our energy bills is on page 3. You know, most NYSEG bills are 5 pages long, but on page 3, it really breaks down how utility customers are charged by NYSEG. And so, you know, the delivery portion of the bill is what's regulated here in New York State. And that is, you know, increasing every May. That's how NYSEG has their rate plan with the Public Service Commission here in New York. They can't just, you know, willy-nilly increase the delivery rate. They do have to go through like an administrative case and get it approved by the state. And so they're coming up on the, you know, end of their third year of a rate plan. And so every May 1st, NYSEG customers do see, you know, an increase on that delivery side. The supply side of the bill, which is underneath. So if you're looking at page 3 of your bill, you know, there's also supply charges. And those supply charges are based on the market. So they're volatile. And we saw really high supply charges, for instance, in 2022. You know, because of Ukraine and Russia, you know, decrease in supply, high demand for fuel during the pandemic. This winter, the supply side has actually been a little bit less, but the overarching, and I think what goes into this second factor is the weather. You know, the winter that we had here in New York was much colder this season than last season. And we've actually been doing like month by month for individuals. And that polar vortex meant that even if you were keeping your thermostat at the same temperature, your heating equipment was working so much harder. And so we do see higher usage, the increase on the delivery side. Thankfully, that supply side was a little less than last year. But for most people we've been talking to, it is that kind of multitude of factors that have resulted in really high bills for them this winter.
One follow-up question I have, just as we talk through the charges and fees, is how much control does NYSEG have over setting these rates?
So NYSEG will actually put their rate proposal together. And so they are the ones that lay it out. We do expect that NYSEG will file for new rates this May. And so that is something that's really important for customers be aware of, is that there is potentially an administrative rate case coming. And so it's almost like, you know, a tennis match. They will serve, you know, they will go forward and say, this is what we believe we need. We need to increase rates to continue to deliver safe and reliable service. But then individuals, parties, so PULP, for instance, my organization, we join as an intervener in that rate case. And, you know, our job is to hit that ball back and really push on, okay, what do you really need? Is it just and reasonable? And so there is an 11-month administrative process where parties can literally get down to, you know, the dime, the penny, the nickel, as far as what they need. It can be, you know, a difficult, long process, but if you're not a party to the rate case, you can actually, you know, just even participate through public comment. There are usually public hearings. The public can submit written comments. And we find that really powerful because at the end of the day, again, everything that goes into that delivery side that they're, you know, indicating need is ultimately paid for by the ratepayer. And so to hear from the public, we've seen be tremendously helpful in pushing back on, you know, very large increases that we've been seeing over the last few years.
So some customers that have, you know, shared concerns with us have, you know, shared concerns due to multiple reasons. Some have shared concerns that the smart meters are the reason for high energy bills. Mm-hmm. Some have claimed that it's New York's green energy initiatives. What is true with these, you know, allegations or concerns?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, unfortunately, it's complicated. I don't think we can point to one specific fact. Again, NYSEG, for instance, has very large storm costs. So I think something that we always come back to is what have they been doing over, you know, decades, to be honest, with tree trimmings, you know, resiliency, moving into where do we go from here? We see more and more extreme storms than ever before. And so being honest, you know, if there's an ice storm, okay, what happened? How long were their outages? But again, did they do the work that they needed to do to prevent as much of, you know, the outage as possible? We are electrifying in New York. We do have the CLCPA, the green energy goals. And so we see when these rate cases are filed, there is movement towards more electrification and resiliency of the grid. But there's also questions on the natural gas side. And so if we're moving away from natural gas, but maintaining that system and electrifying, you know, what are we doing again that's just and reasonable for customers? So I would say it is a complicated, you know, question, but one that organizations like Pulp are in the middle of. And we really are seeing ourselves in a moment and, you know, again, being very honest, tariffs. We've been talking about tariffs now for about a month, but the reality of what may happen, you know, to utility bills is a very big unknown right now.
Lori, you mentioned the tariffs, and I want to talk about that some more, because on Monday, Ontario Premier Doug Ford, he announced he was going to apply a 25% surcharge to electricity supplied in New York, as well as in Michigan and in Minnesota. Here's a little bit of tape from Premier Ford's press conference where he talks about the potential impact of these tariffs on the United States.
This surcharge will cost families and businesses in these states up to $400,000 each and every single day. On an average, this will add around $100 per month to the bills of hardworking Americans. Let me be clear, I will not hesitate to increase this charge. If necessary, if the United States escalates, I will not hesitate to shut the electricity off completely.
I think something that would be extremely helpful for folks is helping us understand where exactly does the electricity come from for that powers New York, and why does that matter? Why do these tariffs matter for New Yorkers?
We do get a great portion of electricity with Canada, but also the grid goes both ways. So it's very interesting as far as, all right, like we essentially, our grids are connected. And so I think, again, we're all looking at this to say, what are the potential cost implications? You know, for us in our world, we, again, are assuming a lot. There's a lot of ifs right now. And so I think in our mind, we're wondering, okay, if there are tariffs, if the supply rate increases, what will that look like for customers on the electric side? What potentially could this mean on the gas side? And so unfortunately, Kim, I think we just don't know yet. And so every single day, we are just working with individuals, trying to keep them calm, but having conversations with them about what they can do now to really take control of their utility bill. And so in New York, we have a lot of low-income utility programs that help offset, you know, arrears if you're falling behind. NYSEG has a monthly discount program for low-income individuals that provides credits to help them afford their bills. And so for low-income customers, we're trying to get them in those programs and, again, get them in the best shape as possible, no matter what may happen. The state is also considering doing work to help moderate-income individuals. And so that conversation is actively happening. What needs to be done? What would that relief look like? And so those conversations are really positive, again, while dealing with the uncertainty of potentially what's coming.
I'm wondering what other advice or tips you might have for customers to maybe consider when it comes to lowering their bills. You know, winter's wrapping up hopefully soon. Is there any advice that you can share with customers to consider to see a lower bill?
So we always encourage people to contact NYSEG first. NYSEG not only has that energy affordability program monthly discount, but they also have their own financial assistance grant called Project Share. So they're a great avenue to connect with. If you're not low income, you can talk to them about programs, for instance, budget billing. That is a way to potentially help you kind of manage your bills over a 12-month period. And then from there, if someone is low income, we usually direct them to their county Department of Social Services. Right now, we have the Home Energy Assistance Program, or HEAP, that has three rounds of funding. It has a regular HEAP grant and then two emergency grants for someone who might be so far behind they get a disconnection notice. And so those are kind of emergency programs, but there's also over at NYSERDA, which is a state authority, they have a program called Empower Plus, and that's where you start to kind of dive into the different energy efficiency programs that might be available. Cornell Cooperative Extension is the regional, you know, low-income, moderate-income energy hub, and so they have different resources available, as does the there's CAPCO. CAPCO also has weatherization resources. So that's, again, kind of how we direct people. We say go to NYSEG first. If you're low income, then go to Department of Social Services. And then, again, low and moderate income, you know, check out NYSERDA's website for programs like Empower Plus that can help with that energy efficiency side.
And thanks to Kimberly Izar, our new reporter, for that story. And it's up on our website if you want to learn more, wjffradio.org. We'll learn more about what's going on at the Western Sullivan Public Library with Callison Stratton after a break, though. Hold on, we'll get to you in a sec. 1 sec. 30 seconds. This is Radio Catskill.
On Catskill Character this week, my guest is Casey Zier from Bethel, New York. She owns and is the baker at Be Kind Bakehouse in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. Join us and discover the baked goods made from scratch with no preservatives, corn syrup, or dye. Plus, she uses florals like lavender, rose water, and there's even a pine needle shortbread. How much more Catskills can you get? Find out Saturday at 10:30 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Okay, now is your cue.
Oh, now is my cue.
Yeah,
thanks,
Tim. Callison Stratton from Western Sullivan Public Library is here. Hi.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Well,
I love
being here.
Thanks for being here.
And you are also here on Saturdays at 7 with your show Liberation Station.
Yes,
don't forget about that. But today we're going to talk about what you're doing at the Western Sullivan Public Library as the youth coordinator there.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a story walk, a guided story walk coming up tomorrow. What is a story walk?
A story walk is a really wonderful, innovative way for children and families and anybody who loves literature to experience a story while also getting to enjoy the outdoors. And I couldn't have planned it with better weather.
Yes.
We finally have kind of broken into spring, it seems. But a story walk is we deconstruct a book and we put it up in windows all the way through town along Lower Main Street in Calicoon.
So this one's happening in Calicoon.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the story that you're going to see along this walk?
So we'll be highlighting the book Berry Song by Michaela Goad. She's a Caldecott honoree. It is a stunningly beautiful book. And it's all about foraging and family. Michaela Goad is a indigenous Tlingit native of the island of Sitka, Alaska. And the whole book is sort of filled with beautiful Tlingit language. So you'll learn a little bit of vocabulary in another language. And each of the pages, we've got a few little like facts about berries and facts about the Tlingit Nation, some recipes and fun things to sort of welcome in the spring, and also just highlight some of the books that are in our collection that are just so beautiful.
That sounds like a great way to engage folks in literature in a different way. You know, you're learning about the book, but you're kind of also learning about the town or the route that you're on, right? Is that part of it?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's one of our ways that the library likes to connect with the local businesses and, you know, just other people in our community and really do that outreach. And this is such a wonderful time of year to do that when people are sort of itching to get outdoors. So the story walk will start at the Delaware Free Branch, which is right at the end of Lower Main Street in Calicoon. And you can go into the library and pick up an activity guide, which is a really nice little, it's just a little pamphlet. It has the map of the story walk. And it has a couple of prompts, some things that you might learn along the way, along your story walk. And if you turn that back into the library, you'll get a little prize, and a little takeaway to learn a little bit more. And it's just a really nice way for people to connect and to share a story together that's not just like sitting down.
So can folks, what time is it tomorrow in Calicoon at the Western Sullivan Public Library? Do you need to pre-register? Can you just show up?
So for the story walk, it is a, for the most part, it's a self-guided tour. You can go anytime that the library is open and pick up an activity guide. If the library isn't open, we also have activity guides at Lit Home and Books and at Roger That Bakery in
right
the Calicoon Marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pop in and grab an activity guide if the library is closed. But I will be leading a guided story walk, tomorrow, Saturday, March 15th at 1 o'clock. We'll be meeting at the Delaware Free Branch. You can register in advance or you can just drop in. You can register online at wsblonline.org and visit our calendar. It'll that guided tour will kind of involve a little bit more of my charm and
you get to be with Callison.
And characterization.
That's the one to sign up for.
I will bring the story to life a little bit more. But if you can't make it tomorrow, it is a self-guided tour.
That's cool.
It'll be up through March 22nd. So you can stop by pretty much any time over the next week to check out.
And
story
there's
walk.
No cost.
There's no cost. All of our library programs are always completely free to the public.
Let's talk about another great program, the Junior Master Gardener Program. It's actually an international youth gardening program. How did you get this started at WSBL?
Well, we've been doing Junior Master Gardeners. We had done it back in 2019, and that was a really successful program. It was led partly with Adrian Picciano of the Dirt Diva.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was sort of helping to lead that program and it was really successful. But then 2020 happened. Can't imagine why that put a damper on that program. But when I took over as the youth programmer last summer, I was looking back at programs that we had done that had been successful. And I thought that this one was a really important one to bring back. We have a wonderful plot in the Tustin Heritage Community Garden behind the Narrowsburg branch. And it's just, you know, been sitting there and we want to do something with it. And, it's already actually become, we've gotten a lot of interest for it. Our first session, which is on, Saturday, April 5th, we only have a couple of spots left, which is exciting. And we'll be meeting on the first Saturday of every month, at 10:30 a.m. And that'll be at the Narrowsburg, the Tustin Keshecton branch. And you can register online again. WSPLonline.org at our calendar.
And what can parents and guardians expect in terms of time commitment and involvement with the program?
So the time commitment, it's once a month. It's a once a month Saturday mornings for an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on the length of the, on the content of that particular program. But you will follow the entire life cycle of these plants from starting seeds to winterizing your garden. And the kids who participate, there'll be a lot of hands-on activities in the classroom, but also a lot of hands-on digging in the dirt in the garden.
Getting
their hands dirty, which will be so wonderful for especially in these warm summer months as they're coming up. And then at the end of the program, if they complete the entire program from April to December, the participants will get a little Junior Master Gardener certificate. We'll have a graduation ceremony, a family harvest meal all together where we get to enjoy the fruits of our labor, quite literally. And it's just a wonderful way also for older kids. If you are, the program is for ages 6 to 12, but if you're an older kid who's interested in gardening, this does fulfill a lot of community service requirements for things like 4-H or Girl Scouts or for school.
Plus, they'll get a green thumb.
And they'll get a green thumb. Yeah. So anybody who has a kid who's interested in being outside and digging in the dirt and getting their hands dirty, this is a really wonderful way. And it's a STEAM program as well. It hits all of the markers of science, technology, engineering, agriculture, math. You get a lot of that, plus some fun arts and crafts activities that'll come out of it as well.
Callison Stratton, the youth coordinator at the Western Sullivan Public Library. More information at WSPLonline.org. And don't forget, tomorrow at 7, it's Callison Show here on Radio Catskill. Yeah. Liberation Station.
Liberation Station. Tune in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, the first Borscht Belt Comedy Club night of 2025. We'll talk to one of the comedians who's performing. This is Radio Catskill.
For the next jazz night in America, Sarah Hanahan, one of the rising stars of the alto saxophone.
My playing and my style, it would be a mix of all these people I've taken things from, including Bird and Jackie McLean, John Coltrane, and then taking my own take on it.
That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me Sunday at 8 here on Radio Catskill.
This week on This American Life, Daniel Sloss is a comedian. And after one of his shows, a fan walked up and told Daniel that he ended his marriage after watching Daniel's special. He even showed him the divorce papers. Then it happened again and again. Fans got in touch to say they'd broken up with their partners after seeing Daniel's show. The comedy routine powerful enough to end your marriage. Listen if you dare this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Borscht Belt Museum is teaming up again with the New York Comedy Club to bring some of the very best NYC comedians to the Catskills. Tomorrow is the first Borscht Belt Comedy Club night of 2025, featuring Adam Muller, Jeff Sheen, Ben Kirschenbaum, and Aaron McGuire, who joins us now on the phone. Aaron, hello.
Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for being here. Now, you're originally from Massachusetts, Arlington, Massachusetts. You mentioned that your humor was influenced by your family and your Boston roots. Did you ever get over to the Catskills during your youth?
Not during my youth. We kind of stuck in the New England area. We're real blue-collar folks. We're like, let's just go to New Hampshire and back to Massachusetts again. I didn't get to discover the Catskills until I went to school. I went to school in Ithaca. So then I started, you know, getting to know a little bit of the upstate New York situation. And I love it up there. I have a friend who got married in Phoenicia. It's so fun. I'm so excited to go back.
Yeah, and you're coming on a good weather weekend, too. It's supposed to be nice. Talk a little bit about your childhood and there in Boston and your family and how that shaped your comedic voice.
I think people from Boston are naturally funny. There's something in the water. And I think it comes from years of being hurt by their sports teams. It's just a survival mechanism, how we get through. I just, you know, I come from a very blue-collar family, a lot of firefighters and nurses, and they're very earthy. And, you know, you just had to survive, I think. I have very funny uncles. And if you wanted to survive unscathed, you had to be able to keep up with their humor.
You've got a pretty vibrant and unique career, stand-up, acting, writing, podcasting. Do you have a particular outlet that you find most fulfilling, or is it that combination that keeps things interesting for you?
I think it's a combination that keeps things spicy. I like to keep my portfolio varied and minimally paying. So I kind of love doing all of it because, you know, they all feed into each other. It's, you know, I'll get ideas for stand-up bits through me riffing on a podcast. And I love my podcast. It's actually perfect for anybody who's coming to the Catskill shows because it's called Dear Pod. It's the comedy advice podcast. Me and my co-host, we rip up the old articles of Ann Landers and Dear Abby. So we'll come up with a theme every week. We'll find articles to fit the theme. And we'll find these articles and we'll sort of talk about them, see if they're advice holds up under modern day standards. And it's just basically, you know, a jumping off point for us to talk about, to be schmucks, essentially, well, for an hour every week.
Dear Pod has found its way into the top 100 comedy podcasts. Was that the concept, to be able to be schmucks, a platform for that?
Yeah, basically. It's like, how do we keep people hostage with our funny? And what is our theme? That's all. It's just a jumping off board for a brunch, essentially.
You play a lot around New York City. In fact, I was going to your website and I saw that you have like 3 shows tonight. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I'm hopping from the west side to the east side to the west side back again.
That is not the most logical path, I would say.
But Uber loves me.
You got to do what you have to do. You've also performed at some really iconic comedy events like the Lucille Ball Comedy Festival. You wrote for some Comedy Central roasts. Has there been a surreal or pinch me moment of your career so far?
I opened for Jim Gaffigan. That was a wild experience. I did a set with him in Boston. So it was like cool to be back on my home turf in a sold out 1200 seat theater, you know. It's kind of that moment where you go, oh, this is what it can be like. I am aiming for this for the rest of my life. So that was pretty fantastic. And I'm excited. I have another one coming up. I'll be making my late night debut on The Colbert Show in a couple weeks.
Awesome. So that's great.
That's my next pinch me is coming up.
Can I ask you about the chocolate fountain? You mentioned one time performing next to a chocolate fountain.
Where are you finding this? Is this on my website?
Oh, we're doing our research over here.
Oh, I got to start burying some things on the internet. Yes, it was. I had been doing stand-up for about 3 months, and somebody hired me to do a private show for a bunch of EMTs in Boston, which, again, you think I can survive. No, you can't always survive these. And my only thing that I said to them was, my only stipulation was that I had to perform before dessert. And I think they misunderstood me. And I was dying a painful death. Nobody was laughing at any of my jokes. So already I feel the flop sweat, you know, dribbling down my back. And then in the middle of my set, they rolled out a huge chocolate fountain in the middle of the dance floor. I was still speaking. And then forget it. You can't compete with a chocolate fountain. You can't. Everybody went rushing to the dance floor. They saw strawberries, pieces of pound cake. It was mayhem. It was a huge line of chocolate fountain. And I'm up there being like, so anyway, men, am I right, ladies? You know, like, you can't compete with a chocolate fountain. Literally. Only Willy Wonka can.
Literally performing before dessert, in front of dessert.
In front of it. Yeah, they took it very literally.
Very literal there. Erin McGuire, self-described as a fiery redheaded comedy pistol. She is performing at the Borscht Belt Comedy Club at night tomorrow at 7. It starts at Shadowland Stages in Ellenville. There's more information at borschtbeltmuseum.org to get some ticket information there, and more information about Erin and her travels across the East and West Side at erinmcguire.com. Erin,
yes,
thank you.
And apparently also, just a side note, the 7 o'clock is almost sold out.
Yep.
So grab dinner before and get tickets to the 9 o'clock because, you know, we want to make sure that you can see the show.
Absolutely.
The show tomorrow night.
And maybe stay for dessert.
Not a chocolate fountain, please.
Erin McGuire, thank you so much. Have a great show. Thanks for coming up to the Catskills.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can get more information about all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
St. Patrick's Day falls on the 17th of March, so next time on the Bagalode Monkeys at the Graham Rice Show on Radio Catskill, I'll be marking the occasion by playing the music of Lifetime Achievement Award winner Donal Lunny as a musician and a producer. So please join me for Donal Lunny on Sunday afternoon at 3.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Sunny to start today, then a few afternoon clouds, a high 57, warmer than yesterday, cloudy tonight, then becoming a little more cloudy after midnight, overcast, low 34. Clouds stick around, but let's call it partly sunny tomorrow, high of 53. And for Sunday, it looks like we're going to get some rain, but a high of 60. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.